Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter entitled Yamaraj Instructs His Messengers, chapter 3, text 9. Niyamanam tavadesad asmabhiryatana gninan Vyamochayan patakinam Chitva pashan prasayate. Niyamanam, being brought, tava adishat, by your order. Asmabhi, by us, yatanagrahan, to the torture chambers, the hellish planets, vyamochayan, released, patakinam, the sinful ajamil, Chitva, cutting, Pashan, the ropes, Prasahya, by force, Te, they. Translation. We were bringing the most sinful Jamil toward the hellish planets, following your order, when those beautiful persons from Siddhaloka forcibly cut the knots of the ropes with which we were arresting him. Please repeat. We were bringing the most sinful Ajamil toward the hellish planets, following your order, when those beautiful persons from Siddhaloka forcibly cut the knots of the ropes with which we were arresting him. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that the Yamadutas wanted to bring the Vishnudutas before Yamaraj. If Yamaraj could then have punished the Vishnudutas, the Yamadutas would have been satisfied. So, the Yamadutas are about to grab Ajamil, and as we mentioned yesterday, also the Vishnudutas interrupted their mission, and so now the Yamadutas there. They're asking Yamaraj the reasoning behind what took place, namely the manifestation of these Vishnudutas on the scene and stopping them from their service to Yamaraj. Yamadutas, they were ready to cut the knots of bondage of Ajamil to his sinful activities And the Vishnu Dutas, they stopped the Yamadutas from taking Ajamil to the hellish planets, to the torture chambers. In the fifth canto, is described very descriptively and very vividly the different hellish planets and the different punishments that are given to the people who perform sinful activities. And we also see that in this world there's suffering due to the laws of material nature, adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibhautika. Misery is inflicted from one's mind. For misery is physically inflicted by different living entities, such as mosquitoes and flies and scorpions and snakes and different living entities, and also by nature, different storms, earthquakes, volcano eruptions like that. As we also mentioned, that in places like Hawaii, right now in the Pacific Ocean, they, for the past 2 months, they've had this volcano eruption. And so people were living in their houses very peacefully for years and decades, and now because of nature, they have to suffer the circumstance of having to leave everything behind, their whole life has been turned upside down. So we're also always suffering, whether it's physically or mentally. Some people they suffer for years and years and years, some kind of chronic disease, and other people they suffer mentally. Also people are born with suffering. When we come to this world, the first thing that happens when we're born is that we're hit by the loving hand of the nurse in the hospital. And of course that's a mechanism to make us exhale, so that we can get our body to function. But of course, then the whole experience of being born is something completely different. Or something completely new, and so therefore anything that we have no knowledge or understanding of us or understanding of can be scary. So like when we're born and they slap us on the behind, and we wake, we're sort of like in a state, in a kind of way, we're sort of like put into a life shock experience. And then, of course, we have to go through life learning everything for the first time and learning from our mistakes through life and learning with the with the life experience of happiness and distress, and then of course we get friends and we get enemies, and so we have to suffer the peer pressure from our parents and all kinds of mental circumstances, favorable, unfavorable, pleasing, not pleasing. And then we have to suffer disease, death, old age, and rebirth. So that's the nature of samsara. So as we sing in the morning, samsara dhava nalalidha loka tranaya karuna gana ganatvam praptasya kalyana gunana vasya Vande Guru Sri Charana Ravindam. So it's the mercy of the Guru or the spiritual masters to wake us up and cut the knots of material existence and to rain on the blazing fire of material bondage and suffering in this world by inculcating and blessing us with divya gyan, divine knowledge, by the mercy of the spiritual master when one receives spiritual consciousness and rebirth, but not material rebirth, but spiritual enlivenment and enlightenment. So, by the mercy of our spiritual teachers and our God brothers and God sisters on the path of bhakti, we can become free from the hellish existence of material life by following their orders and instructions that are meant to help us. Sometimes, as I explained also, the instructions that are given to us by our peers and by our superiors and by our friends and frenemies, enemies, sometimes those instructions can be very painful. But all, as is explained in the Bhaktivedanta purports, that the atmosphere is always friendly. It may seem at times and many times that devotional life is unfriendly, and we may feel that we're being, instead of spoken to, we're being spoken at, and instead of being instructed in a nice way, we may be thinking that they're actually against us and our spiritual brothers and sisters are giving us bad instruction, but all instruction is good. We just have to we have to see it in that light, whether it's positive or negative. In the end, everything is for our benefit, because in the human form of life, we have the possibility to take advantage of the ultimate goal, which is Krishna Prema. Sometimes devotees, they think that when we go back to the spiritual world, everything will be very nice and peaceful and happy. But actually, whether you know it or not, when we get back to the spiritual world, then the torture, the real torture chambers will be open to us. Spiritual life, material life, is hellish, but spiritual life is transcendentally hellish. What does that mean? That means that even in the spiritual world, people are being pressured. The cowherd boys and the cowherd girls, they're fighting. They're performing the color festival of Holi and throwing different kinds of water weapons, colored water, in the form of flower bombs, and the gopis, is described in the Ananda Vrindavan Champu, that the gopis, they capture Madhu Mangal, and they tie him up with ropes, and then they pull his ears. And Madhu Mangal is screaming for Krishna to come and save him. And then Krishna, he hears that Madhu Mangal is crying. So then Krishna becomes angry, and then he comes and frees Madhu Mangal. And all the cowherd boys, they're fighting with the cowherd girls, like that. And we know that Krishna, he's always pinching the gopis and causing them mental distress like that. So here in this world, we may have mosquitoes that are pinching us, but in the spiritual world, we might have Krishna pinching us. So watch out. Be careful with what you desire in spiritual life. If you desire to be with Krishna, that black thief, lampata, that rascal black thief Krishna. But that's for his pleasure. Everything is for Krishna's pleasure. So if Krishna derives happiness, then we'll let him have his way. Of course, we won't always let him have his way. We'll also get back at him also in the transcendental fighting that goes on in the spiritual world. And then, of course, Krishna always wins, so that's good. So today is also the appearance day of Gadadhar Pandit, disappearance, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, both disappearance, huh? Okay. Are there any questions so far for the Bhagavatam? Okay. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is a great acharya in our line of the Gaudiya, Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. He was left in his childhood as an orphan. He left in the care of his grandfather, or relatives like that, and his relatives were very, very rich. They had lots of properties and land, and they had many people working, many servants. And his grandfather was a worshiper of the Shakti Shiva or Kali. Maybe Shiva. And so that greatly influenced Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his youth. Except that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was extremely intelligent, and he was very prolific in his studies. He wrote many books, as we know. And then gradually he became more and more interested in Vaishnavism. The problem at that time was that in India, that Vaishnavism had degraded, just like everything in this material world is in flux. So, and also, Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that this chain of disciplic succession was lost in due course of time. So, at that time in Bengal, the pure teachings of Vaishnavism had become covered over. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he developed a keen interest in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and gradually he turned away from his former life. There's one book called The Seventh Goswami, and it explains in that book that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's actually a perfected soul, but it explains that actually he was a fish eater, and Krishna, for some reason or another, he was born in that kind of a situation. But by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the previous acharyas, he became enlightened and as a perfected soul. And of course, this is pastime. We all know that there's another personality in Krishna Lila who is also not vegetarian. Can anyone think who that is? Who? Garuda. Yes, Garuda is non-vegetarian, and he's the carrier of Lord Vishnu. He has direct contact with Lord Vishnu. That's very amazing, huh? So Krishna is very kind. So we know, of course, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his later years, he wrote so many books, and then he had two wives. One of them died, and then his second wife, I believe her name was Bhagavati. I think her name was Bhagavati. And we know that he had, was it 9 or 10 children? And of course, the most prominent one was His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada. The spiritual master of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, our Srila Prabhupada. So I guess we'll talk a little bit now about Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit was a very early associate of Nimai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In his youth, he had different names. Nimai was one of his names. Can anyone say which other name he had? At birth, he was given Vishvambar. Uh-huh. Yeah. So Nimai, he became very advanced. Apparently, he was very, very quick to learn all the Sanskrit grammar. And so then, when he was maybe 16, actually, he began to teach grammar and Sanskrit to other young children. And one of those associates of his was Gadadhar Pandit. And as we know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Nimai, as they say in English, he became transcendentally full of himself, meaning that he had some kind of like transcendental false ego, and he would debate with anyone and everyone. So he would roam the streets of Navadvip with his students. And if he saw someone, whether it was a senior or an equal, he would go up to that person and attack them with academia, and he would challenge them to debate. And so most of the people in Navadvip, they were very much afraid of being attacked by Nimai Pandit, so they would always try to avoid altercation with him. So one of those persons was Gadadhar Pandit, and Gadadhar Pandit, he was extremely scared of having any kind of direct encounter with Nimai in terms of challenging to debate. So if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on one side of the street, then Gadadhar Pandit, he would quickly run to the other side of the street and try to escape. But Nimai, he would always capture him and ask him all kinds of technical questions on Sanskrit and grammar, etc. And he would always Nimai Pandit would always defeat anyone who he would challenge. Nimai Pandit could. He could ask them anything, and then whatever answer they gave, then Nimai Pandit, he would destroy that argument piece by piece, and then he would present a new argument that would actually support the argument that he destroyed. And he would do that again and again, and which is inconceivable. But being God, then he can do those things. And so another pastime of Gadadhar Pandit later on in Jagannath Puri, Gadadhar Pandit became the priest or pujari for the most beautiful lordships, Shishi Tota Gopinath, which is one of the very, very, very ancient temples in Jagannath Puri that is open to non-Hindus. And if you've never been to Jagannath Puri, then you're in Maya, because Jagannath Puri is one of three rooms to the house of bhakti and Krishna consciousness. Mayapur, Vrindavan, and Jagannath Puri are very, very important places. We should always meditate on Vrindavan, Mayapur, and Jagannath Puri. And that day we can also go and visit the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived for 18 years of his life. The last 18 years of the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were spent in Jagannath Puri. So Gadadhar Pandit was the priest. He had taken a vow of Chetra sannyas. There's different kinds of sannyas. There's Mayavad sannyas, Vaishnav sannyas. Chetra sannyas means that one takes a vow to not move or leave a particular area or location, such as a holy land like Vrindavan, Mayapur, or Jagannath Puri. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would go from Navadvip. He would go back and forth to Jagannath Puri every year for the Rath Yatra festival before he retired for the last 18 years of his life. He would go back and forth, and he would have all his associates from Navadvip go every year to Jagannath Puri. And so one year after the Jagannath Rath Yatra festival, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to depart and leave Jagannath Puri, and Gadadhar Pandit, who had taken his vow of never leaving Jagannath Puri, he decided to break that vow, and he wanted to go with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that he had taken the vow to not leave Jagannath Puri. And in spiritual life, we also sometimes make vows, like we follow Ekadasi and different kinds of vows that may be there. And it's actually considered sinful if you vow before the deities and then you don't keep that vow. You get sinful reactions for breaking that vow if you've made that vow before the deities. So Gadadhar Pandit, he was ready to break that vow because he understood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead at that time. He was ready to break that
that vrata. But Lord Chaitanya, he forbade him. And so Gadara Padat, he remained behind in Jagannath Puri when after Mahaprabhu had left that year. Gadadhar Pandit, we know that he's the shadow incarnation of Srimati Radharani. So Lord Chaitanya, he's descended in the mood of Radharani, and he is different, just like when Krishna descends, the different demigods, they also descend in order to play out the different pastimes for the pleasure of the Lord. So when Lord Chaitanya descends, of course, Lord Chaitanya is not an avatar, he's an avatari. Avatari never actually has to descend. An avatar is someone who descends, comes down. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's simultaneously Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. He doesn't have to come or go to some place, because he's everywhere. As Paramatma, as the spiritual master, and the different manifested forms of Krishna, they have to come. But Lord Chaitanya, he's different from your regular avatar or incarnation. So I guess we'll stop here for some questions, if there's any questions. Yes?
Can you share your experience with the Aida Prabhu, because not anyone will be there at 12 o'clock.
Oh. Well, if I would have known that. Aida Prabhu, he was born in a family of musicians, and he was born in the state of Virginia in 1953, I believe. And Aida Prabhu, he was a country boy. He was born on a farm, and he had two brothers that I know of. One of them may still be alive. Anyhow, Virginia is next to Washington, D.C. And Aida Prabhu, the first musical instrument he had was a banjo. And then when he went to high school, he learned how to play the flute. Also, Sachinandan Maharaj, there's some photographs of him before he joined, and he has long hair, and he's playing a flute. Sachinandan Maharaj also plays the flute. So Aida Prabhu, he became interested in spiritual life by receiving a book from somebody else. Actually, that somebody else was his so-called wife, because they were not married. And Aida Prabhu, he also had very, very long hair, orange color hair, red hair. And before he joined, he understood the purpose of sacrifice. So he was also I don't know for how long, but he was, I don't know if you know what is called macrobiotic, it's like fruitarian, but like vegetarian, but macrobiotic means that you only eat fresh food that's not cooked. So like that. And he was apparently, he would, I don't know for how long, but he would eat only 3 figs every day. And anyhow, he also had a rock and roll band. He was a guitar player, and when he first read the Bhagavad Gita, because there was one Bhagavad Gita in that belonged to his father, in the house, and so his father wasn't a devotee. His father was like a Buddhist, New Age, back in then those days, I guess. Some kind of so his father knew that he was reading Bhagavad Gita, and he was also not following the regular principles like most of us, and despite the fact Ayendra Prabhu he would visit Washington D.C. He would hitchhike maybe 2 hours to go to Washington D.C. to go to the Harinam, and there's a very funny story that when Mataji she remembers, god sister of his, disciple of Prabhupada, that he would come to the Harinam. And one day he came, and he was wearing flip-flops. You know what flip-flops are? It's like sandals, like shoes, but they're like sandals, yeah. And they make that sound, flip-flop, flip-flop. That's why I know they're by the name flip-flop. Sandals. So anyhow, they're not like very secure. They're like loose. So that's why they go flip-flop, because they make that sound, because they're not secure like that. So he was wearing these flip-flops, and he was following the Harinam, and then he lost one of his flip-flops. And so, but he was following the Harinam, and the Mataji, she saw that he left his shoe behind, and she told him to go back and get your flip-flop. And he said no, because if he goes and gets his flip-flop, then he might miss the Harinam might keep going, and then he'll miss them. He didn't want to be separated from the Harinam, so he renounced his one shoe to stay with the Harinam. So even back then, he was very renounced, not artificially. So, yeah, his so-called wife, she received Ishopanishad, and so she came to their apartment, and she showed him the book, she gave him the book, and so he was very happy to read the book, and he was reading the book like that. And then later on, I think I got this mixed up. But anyhow, he was living still in the country, but maybe he would also stay at this apartment. So when he finally decided to become a devotee, then he asked his father if he could take him to the temple. Before that, actually, I backtrack. He was a guitar player, and he had a band, and so he decided to renounce and give up all his guitars and equipment and everything. So he gave to all his different friends. He gave the guitar, and he gave the amplifier, and so many things like that. And they all thought that he was crazy to do that. And, I forgot. Also, the other thing is that he wanted to make some real kind of sacrifice. So he took a pair of scissors, and he took his hair, and he went, and he cut up. He wanted to be, detached from his hair. So he put the hair in a paper bag, and then he asked one of his friends to go to the temple and put it on the asked the pujari to offer it to in the old days, devotees, they would offer, because you're supposed to, when you go to the temple, you're supposed to offer at least a flower or fruits. So some devotees, they would offer their new clothes, like when you go to India, you can offer jewelry, and then gets blessed, and then you bring the jewelry back and like that. So he decided to offer his hair. He went and he cut off a whole chunk of hair. So then after he gave all his musical equipment away, then he was becoming more serious, and he joined in 1975, I believe, 1975, and he very soon after that, he in America at that time, the book distribution started to grow and grow, and they started having buses to travel and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books all over North America. So that traveling Sankirtan party was named the Radha Damodar Traveling Sankirtan Party. And they had the deities of Sri Sri Radha Damodar that are now at the Gita Nagari farm in Pennsylvania, in the country. And they also had many other buses, all those buses, they had deities of Gornitai. And Ayendar Prabhu, after he got second initiation, he was the pujari in Washington, D.C. Actually, Washington, D.C., the original temple was a house in the city. And then the place where they have now is outside, 1 hour north of Washington, D.C., in near the next state, which is called Maryland. And that temple is called Potomac, ISKCON Potomac. So he was pujari there, but he wanted to travel and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. So at that time, the leader of the Radha Damodar Party bus, actually, the leaders were Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Swami. So Vishnujan Swami was traveling, and he arrived in Washington, D.C., and Ayendar Prabhu, he decided to take the opportunity to try to change his service and travel and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. So he approached Vishnujan Swami, and he was hesitant because he knew that each bus had deities, and they needed pujaris. And he wanted to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books as much as possible. So when he finally got to speak directly with Vishnujan Swami, he explained to Vishnujan Swami that he wanted to join the traveling Sankirtan party. And he said to Vishnujan Swami, that he wanted to join. And then Vishnujan Swami, he said that he wanted to join, but he was afraid that if he joined the traveling Sankirtan party, they would make him the pujari, and if he was the pujari, he would have to do all the offerings and all the pujas, and then he wouldn't have enough time to distribute books. So he said to Vishnujan Swami, I want to join, but... So Prabhupada explains that this, the word but actually means no. So when he said that to Vishnujan Swami, Vishnujan Swami said, never say you want to do something. Because if you really wanted to do something, you wouldn't say that you wanted to do it, because if you really wanted to do it, you'd be doing it. Circular logic, yeah. So, Aindra Prabhu, he loves that statement by Vishnujan Swami. And so he joined the traveling Sankirtan party. And there's a few stories of that experience of his. He was pujari, but he would also distribute books. And one of his experiences is called the cemetery pastime. So in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it explains that stealing flowers for the deities is bona fide. So they would travel all over the United States, and they would come to some town or some village or whatever, and the first thing the pujaris would do was they would take a van at nighttime and go to the cemetery. So Aindra Prabhu, he took one van to one cemetery one night, and he had a flashlight or a torch, and he would turn it on and off, because near the cemetery there was a big apartment building, so if he had the flashlight on it all the time, then someone might see that someone's in the cemetery with a at nighttime, in you know, so then he would have these garbage plastic bags, and he would get all the flowers that were on all the tombstones that were, you know, for the dead people, and so then he put all the flowers in the van, and then he closed the back door of the van. And then he got into the driver's seat, and he was just about to go, turn the key, and then he heard this sound. Zip, 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 zip. And then he looked, and there was 5 police cars. So then the police, they got out of their cars, and they had these big, big, heavy metal flashlights, and they started to bang on the van, on the window. So then they told him to get out of the car. So then the chief of the police, he asked Aindra Prabhu, "So what are you doing here?" And then he said, "Open the back door." So then Aindra Prabhu, he went and he opened the back of the van, and there's all these bags. So some of the policemen, they opened the bags, and there's all these flowers. So then the chief of police, he thought for a moment, and then he looked at all his police officers. And they all started to laugh. And then the police officer, he became very serious. And then he said to Aindra, oh no, he said, he said, what is this? And Ayendra Prabhu, he became very dramatic, and so he put his hands together and he said to the policeman, "Oh, police, Mr. Police Chief, our church is poor, and we needed flowers for our deities, and besides, we didn't think that the dead people would matter, would mind." So then the police chief, he became very serious, and then he said to Ayendra Prabhu, "Get out of here," and he let him go. Ayendra Prabhu ki jai. It's 15 minutes after. Is there time for one more?
It's fasting.
Fasting? Oh, okay. Okay. So the next pastime is called the strawberry sweet rice pastime. So they were traveling all over North America, and they came to a small preaching center, and it was the Sunday feast. So after the Sunday feast, Ayendra Prabhu noticed that there was one bucket of strawberry sweet rice that was not honored. So Ayendra Prabhu was the pujari, and like all pujaris, they're the last devotees to go to sleep at night and the first devotees to get up in the morning. So Ayendra Prabhu, he thought to himself, "I'm going to get up very early tomorrow morning, extra early, and I'm going to honor the prasadam." So so a bucket of strawberry sweet rice. So the bucket of sweet rice was in a refrigerator, walk-in refrigerator with a door. So he got up extra early the next day, and he went downstairs, and he opened the refrigerator door, and he walked inside, and he walked up to the bucket of the strawberry sweet rice, and he looked inside, and what did he see? He saw a dead rat. In the sweet rice. So Ayendra Prabhu, he picked up the rat by the tail and pulled him out of the bucket, and then he scooped up the top of the sweet rice from the bucket. And then, Maha Prasad Govinde Namo Brahmane Vaishnave Svalpalpunya Vatan Rajan Visvasana Vijayate. Mahaprasadam ki! So, Ayendra Prabhu may or may not be on the level of Prahlad Maharaj, where Prahlad Maharaj, he could eat a poison cake. But because he had pure faith in the protection of God, we may not be on that level. So we may not imitate great personalities like Prahlad Maharaj or Ayendra Prabhu. But it's an individual thing. So. So that's the strawberry sweet rice pastime. I'm not sure, but it's possible. In his when I joined the 24-hour kirtan party, Ayendra Prabhu, he explains that in Ayurveda, according to Ayurveda, if you eat at 12 o'clock in the daytime, the digestion is the most powerful. Or if you eat at 12 o'clock at night, only one time. If you eat one time, then, you know, so he would, Ayendra Prabhu's Ayendra Prabhu's schedule was very extraordinary because he was also in charge of the 24-hour kirtan. 24 hours means that it's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. So some devotees, they have to do the night shift. Actually, in the 24-hour kirtan, it's a rotation system. So if you have the devotees in Vrindavan, they do 2 3-hour shifts. So they might do 4 to 7, and then in the morning, and then they might do 7 to 10 at night, for example, or 10 to 1 in the morning, or like that. So Ayendra Prabhu, in the early years of his career in America, like many devotees, they would do Harinam, like you also used to do 5 hours a day in Padyatra. You used to do 5 hours of Padyatra in the daytime? Before. Right. Huh. So many Prabhupada disciples, they would do like 10 or 14 hours of Harinam every day. So Ayendra Prabhu, he used to do that in America. And in India, he used to do many hours. Later on in the end of his pastimes, manifest pastimes, then he had issues with his voice, so he couldn't sing for so many hours anymore. So in the last years of his manifest pastimes, he would do like 1 hour only, like that. But he would be managing the 24-hour kirtan department. And then people would come to him to ask some questions on philosophy, and like, and sometimes the answers for the questions would go for like 5 hours. You know, like Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he would give a Bhagavatam class and it would last for 3 hours, and like, or Lokanath Maharaj, his classes last for 1 or 2 hours, some things like that. So Ayendra Prabhu, sometimes if he started to talk, then he wouldn't stop. And so that would take up a lot of his time. And then he had to do his deity worship. And in the early years, he didn't have as many deities as he does now. Now he has like 2,300 Shalagram Shilas, and he has this big Nitai Sachi Sutta, and then he has his Govardhan Shilas, and then he has his original Nitai Sachi Sutta, Gaur Nitai Didis, that he got in America. That's another pastime. But his small Nitai Sachi Sutta Didis, they're there now. But I remember when I joined full time, one time Ayendra Prabhu, he got malaria, and I had to do his deity worship for him for 1 or 2 days. The first day it took me 10 hours. And for him, in the last days of his manifest pastimes, it would take him normally like 5 hours to do his deity worship, and then he'd have to manage the 24-hour kirtan, and then he'd have to, you know, speak to people, and if there was any kind of misunderstandings or devotees were fighting or whatever, he'd have to, you know, preach to them and like that. And then other devotees, like god brothers, they would come to visit him. So he didn't have very much time, although it may have appeared that he did, but he didn't. And his schedule was that he would his first duty was to chant his rounds, and so he was chanting 64. He was chanting 2 times 64 rounds a day. And Srila Prabhupada explains that 64 rounds can be chanted in 6 hours. But he was chanting, he was managing the 24-hour kirtan, he was doing his deity worship, and then people would come and ask him philosophical questions, and then when he opened his mouth, he could not close his mouth. And he would talk for 1 hour, for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, into the night. And so his first business, his first duty, was to chant his japa. And then if people came to ask him questions, then he'd have to answer his questions. So usually he would do his deity worship. Actually, he would not eat until after he did his deity worship. And he would only eat one time. And so usually he would end up doing his deity worship at nighttime, because his whole day was interrupted with, you know, managing and doing his deity worship. I mean, managing and answering questions. So then he might start his deity worship at 6 o'clock at night, or no, I'm sorry, at 6 o'clock he would come down for kirtan. But after the kirtan, for example, he would try to start his deity worship at 7 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock. But because people would come and see him, then he would have to preach. And when he preached, he couldn't stop preaching. So then he might start his deity worship at 10 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night or 12 o'clock at night or 1 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock at night. And as I explained, his deity worship took like at least 5 hours to complete, including cooking. So he would have to get the vegetables and cut the vegetables and clean the pots or whatever, and then cook. And then he might finish his deity worship at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. So when he finished his deity worship, then he would, you know, Mahaprasad Govinde Nama Brahmana Vaishnave Swabha Punya Vatan Rajan Visvasana Vijayate. And then he'd finish his one meal of the day. And by that time, it was the sandhya. So he would chant his morning Gayatri, like at 6 o'clock. And then he'd take rest. So he would, from 6:05 in the morning, he would take rest until the next sandhya, 12 o'clock. Of course, he would get up, he would take shower first, so so he would probably, he wouldn't be sleeping 6 hours, he'd probably be sleeping 4 or 5 hours, like that. So then he'd chant his noon Gayatri, and then he'd start to get ready for his japa. And like he was chanting 2 times 64 is? Huh? 128 rounds. And then people would come and knock on his door to ask some philosophical question. And so then the whole cycle. So that's basically his schedule. So So,
sorry, I have one question.
Yeah.
Where is the border between Paradism and between surrender?
Border between? Fanatism. Fanatism and surrender. Everything is according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
Can you make a repeat question?
What is the difference between fanaticism and surrender? Well, it's an individual thing. Surrender is an individual thing. But ultimately, everything is under the checks and balances of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So there's one instruction that we can there's one instruction to the spiritual master that one can disobey. Does anyone know what that is? If the spiritual master asks his disciple to get married, he can reject that instruction. That's the only instruction that one can reject from the spiritual master. All other instructions should be followed. That's the life of our our existence is to surrender and follow the orders of the spiritual master. So the question is asked that in order for one to become self-realized and understand what one's spiritual identity in the spiritual world is, one must consult that with the spiritual master. It's not like Sahajya or anything like that. According to Jaiva Dharma, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which today is his disappearance day. So in the Jaiva Dharma, it explains the science of self-realization according to one's spiritual identity. But if one does not get that information of one's spiritual identity before the spiritual master leaves this world, then Prabhupada says and explains that the spiritual master can also come in one's dream and give him that information. So nothing is done whimsically in spiritual life. Everything is done according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. If the Guru is not available, if the Sadhus are not available, then you have the Shastra. The Shastra is non-different than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, as I mentioned in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the atmosphere is always friendly. Any other question?
So as I understood, Indra Prabhu could eat only 3 figs per day.
This was before in America when he was a new devotee in America.
So very little, or on the other hand, very a lot. So very little and also possible a lot.
Yeah.
Like a bucket of
strawberry. Oh yeah. Right. Right, that's a good point. That's a big contrast. Yeah. So when he would finish his deity worship, in the later days, he would, because his Nittai Sachi Sutta are the same size as Panchatattva, and not only would he feed them a lot of prasadam, he would feed them like, you know, because they're young boys and they're very hungry. So he would make big plates of khichdi and fresh tomatoes and fresh cheese and fresh cucumbers and many milk sweets and if he could make some fried Karela and fried cashews and peanuts with raisins and papadums and once a year the devotees would cook for his deities at the end of Kartik, because that's to feed all the devotees from the temple. Some devotees would help him, and his favorite halava is orange peel halava with cashews and raisins and saffron. And also one of his favorite preparations is stuffed chilies, like the not small but big chilies, and like a pakora.
He was cooking in his small room.
Yeah, he would cook in his room. Yeah, but for festival time, the cooking would be in the temple kitchen. Different devotees would cook for the feast, like at the end of Kartik or Gopurnim.
And if someone would come and try to say, oh, what is so nice smelling, he used to throw him out because he had what to do here, you rascal.
Of course. Yeah, this, the cooks, they never taste or smell, because everything's for Krishna, for his pleasure. So he should be pleased first. Not Krishna's number one, and we're number two. We're not number one. Krishna's number one. So everything is for his pleasure. Continuing the theme on surrender and fanaticism. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, in one of his early writings, was a small pamphlet, and the name of that pamphlet was "Who is Crazy?" Because many non-devotees, they think the Hare Krishnas are very crazy, right? So Prabhupada, as we know, explains that everyone in the material world is crazy. So, devotees may be transcendentally crazy, some more and some less, but the idea is to become crazy for Krishna. That is the perfection of crazy, to be crazy for Krishna. Because if we don't become crazy for Krishna, then we'll have to become crazy for Maya. It's either Krishna or Maya. So better to be crazy for Krishna than to be crazy for Maya. So that's Atma Nivedanam. Full surrender is required. Krishna is not looking for what we give him, but Krishna is looking for what we hold back, behind our back. So we have to learn how to surrender completely, absolutely. And that is the perfection of surrender. to surrender to our body, mind, and words. Is there any other question? Yes.
Ahindra Prabhu was also dressing the deities sometimes.
The temple deities, yes.
Yeah. So could you speak something on this?
Yeah, before I joined in 1995, actually, Ahindra Prabhu, he re-inaugurated the 24-hour kirtan because in 1977, when Srila Prabhupada left the planet, they had continued his desire for the 24-hour kirtan, but it only lasted for about 2 years because the management could not continue the 24-hour kirtan department. And so then in Ahindra Prabhu, he went to India the first time in 1983 or 81, I'm not sure. So he noticed that there was no 24-hour kirtan. The first time he went to India, he was in New York before, and in New York he started doing Harinam every day because there was nobody doing Harinam every day also in New York City. So he was going out every day, and then eventually he would go to the Indian neighborhoods and he would get donations. So then he built a Harinam van vehicle, and Ahindra Prabhu's Harinam vehicle was he customized it so that they had two doors that opened on the side of the van, and inside was a replica of the Krishna Balaram temple with chandeliers and black and white marble tiles on the floor. And so there's some photographs on the internet of his van. So he had that Harinam van for some time, but then as time went on, the management in New York City they had changed different priorities, policies, and so they were not actually helping him very financially or anything, and so he and also manpower. Sometimes he would go by himself, sometimes devotees would go with him, but not very many devotees. In the very early days of New York City ISKCON temple, they would have like 100 or 200 devotees going out every day for hours and hours and hours. But then after Prabhupada left the planet, then things became a little bit deteriorated. But he would go out, and then because after some years, then he sort of became frustrated. So he decided to go to Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan there was no 24-hour kirtan in Vrindavan, so he would do like 1 or 2 hours every day because his service was pujari. And he would dress the deities every day, I think like 2 hours a day or something like that, or 1 hour a day or something. And back in the early days, then at some point, one of the Brajbasi or workers, I think he was the accountant or something from the temple, had a dream of Prabhupada came in his dream. And Prabhupada was asking that why was there no 24-hour kirtan. So the accountant, he saw Ahindra Prabhu one day, and he told him that Prabhupada was in his dream. So the accountant, when he was telling this to Ahindra Prabhu, the accountant was crying because Prabhupada came in his dream. So then when Ahindra Prabhu saw the accountant crying, then he also started to cry. And so he realized that actually Prabhupada wanted the 24-hour kirtan, so he reinaugurated the 24-hour kirtan in 1986, like that. And so he was still doing pujari service. Back then there was no computers, so there was no database. So Ayendra Prabhu would transcendentally speculated, because in the non-devotee world, people normally work 8 hours a day. And originally in ISKCON, devotees would do service for 8 hours a day. In India, it's not very practical because the weather is very extreme. When it gets to be 45 degrees Celsius or 50 degrees Celsius, you can't do very much service because it's very austere. And in the wintertime, maybe not as austere as here. There's no snow in Vrindavan, but still it gets a little cold like that. But anyhow, they were doing 8 hours of kirtan every day, plus Ayendra Prabhu was doing 2 hour or 1 or 2 hours of pujari service. So he was doing 10 hours of devotional service a day. And actually, there's one devotee who used to be on the 24-hour kirtan with Ayendra Prabhu, and he was also cooking. So he was doing 8 hours of kirtan and 1 hour of deity worship with Ayendra Prabhu, and then 2 hours of cooking or something like that. So he was doing like 11 or 12 hours of like that. That's back in the old days when there was no air conditioning and there was no drinking water. The water for drinking, we had to travel across the street and get these big containers and get the local water that was from a well, and it was salty water. Actually, we would boil the water, and then after the water was boiled, when inside the pot there would be this white ring around on the water level of calcium after boiling the water. So it's like heavy water, or hard, it's called hard water. So there's sweet water and then there's hard water. Hard water means it's salty, like that. So there's no drinking water, there's no air conditioning, maybe some fans. In India, every room has a fan, but there's not always electricity. The electricity goes off maybe 10 times a day, like that. And especially when you're sleeping and there's no fan, then it's like, it's so austere that you can't sleep because you're sweating and there's no relief at all. So back in the old days, it was very austere. And then they were doing so much service like that. Very, very inconceivable. But, I wanted to mention also, Ayendra Prabhu's Nitai Sachi Sutta Didis that are the same size as Panchatattva, he would every night physically put them to rest. He would eat Nitai and Sachi Sutta, he would put them down to rest every night, the same size. Of course, in this case, you chant mantras and like that. In the small gornitais, you have a bed for them like that. But Ayendra Prabhu, he was very inconceivable. And his many times he had dreams. His deities would be in his dreams, and Prabhupada would be in his dreams also. There's many conversations that you can hear that are audio on the internet of his different conversations about many things, and also some Srimad Bhagavatam classes. Are there any other questions?
I don't know how to say. Maybe you can explain. You said that Prabhupada wanted, he would like this 24-hour kirtan. Like, you know, is there some, probably there is difference before when there was 24-hour kirtan and now? You can explain difference of mood or like, you know what? So why was it so important for Prabhupada to have these 24 hours?
Because Harinam Sankirtan is the Yuga Dharma. Harinam Sankirtan is the Yuga Dharma. So we can continue this later on, unless there's another question. Okay. Grantras Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ayendra Prabhu ki jai. Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.